Geraldine Brooks won a Pulitzer Prize for fiction in 2006 for March. Her latest novel, Caleb's Crossing, is about the first Native American to graduate from Harvard in 1665, and it weaves fact with fiction to tell the story of how Caleb, and I wish I could pronounce his last name, but I'll try, Cheshatiamauk.
Cheshatiamauk is the closest that I can get.
the story of how he grew up on Martha's Vineyard and of his friendship with Bethia, Puritan minister's daughter. It's published by Viking, and I'm very pleased that it brings Geraldine Brooks back to our show. Hello.
Hi, it's great to be back with you.
And as I said, the story is based on a real person, Caleb whatever. How did you first find out about him?
I had moved to live on Martha's Vineyard, and I was fascinated by this uninterrupted community of Wampanoag Indians who've been there on the island for thousands of years, and I wanted to learn more about them. And the tribe has wonderful materials about their history and culture, and I got a hold of this map that they have made of sites of significance to the tribe on the island, and there was a notation on the map saying, birthplace of Caleb, first Native American to graduate from Harvard, and then the date of his commencement. And my eye just transposed that date. I wanted to read 1965 because that made sense to me, that it would be in the civil rights period. And then I realized I'd misseen it, and it was 1665. And my imagination was just on fire to know how that had come about.
Well, how much of a historical record is there beyond that map?
Oh, the historical record is sadly scant, and 17th century Harvard, the archive is fairly sparse, so I sat down there and read my way through it, basically, and then I talked to people in the tribe about the oral history of Caleb and his family.
And then you made up the rest.
Yeah, well, it's just voids, huge voids, and that's where the historical novelist makes their meal, you know? So the good news is that there wasn't much, and the bad news is that there wasn't much.
What about the other side, the settlers?
That was fascinating, too, because coming to the vineyard, I'd wondered what on earth would have impelled English colonists to have gone there as early as 1641, when there was still, let's face it, a lot of land on the mainland to steal. Why would you put 7 miles of treacherous ocean currents between yourself and the nearest people like you? Well, it's inconvenient enough even today, living on Martha's Vineyard. So the answer to that question was intriguing, that they had wanted to put some distance between themselves and the thumb of the Massachusetts Bay Colony, which had become very Taliban-like, actually.
So this was really a matter of just looking for a little more religious tolerance.
I think a little less religious orthodoxy, yeah. The colony had got to the point when they were really, if you had a slight doctrinal difference, you could be expelled into the wilderness or have your ears cut off, or, you know. And I think just one of the earliest settlers really longed for just to run his own show. So they were real Americans in essence, in that they wanted independence above all.
You're an Australian. How different is the story from one that you might have written involving Australian Aborigines?
The issues of dispossession and the devastations of disease are very familiar to me. And plus, we have the very recent history in Australia of the stolen generations, Aboriginal children who were taken out of their communities and put in white schools. And I wondered, well, was Caleb a stolen child? Was this something that was completely against his volition? And in the end, I decided that I didn't believe that about him, because once he got through the prep school training, which was rigorous, he had to be fluent in Latin, for one thing, before he could even go to Harvard, because all the classes were conducted in Latin.
He had to be Christian.
He was Christianized. He stayed there. A lot of Indians who went to Harvard's Indian College, and they had a separate building for as a dormitory for Indian students. They really planned to educate a great many Native Americans at that time. But a lot of the kids left, and Caleb chose not to leave. And the one thing that has come down to us that he wrote himself is an essay in Latin about the myth of Orpheus. And I think at some point he embraced this other culture. Whether that means he renounced his own or was deracinated from it, we'll never know.
Well, he was obviously multilingual because he spoke his
Wampanoag, yeah.
And then he spoke English, and then he spoke Latin as well.
And Greek.
Pretty
and a little
impressive.
Hebrew.
Your narrator is Bethia Mayfield. Is she based on a real person?
She's not. She's made up out of whole cloth. But I wanted to tell his story through a set of English eyes, somebody who could observe him but really not essentially know him at heart. And so I put her in a family that actually existed. The Mayhew family were the first English settlers on the island, and one of them was an evangelist to the Indians. So I put my fictional character in that family. But I found that there are no women's journals of colonial American life. Nothing's come down to us from the 17th century. So,
well, it was remarkable that Caleb went to Harvard, but it would have been just as remarkable for a woman to go there.
Well, no women went to Harvard for quite some time after that, actually. But women were always around, and I imagined that some women, as my character does, tried to steal education by overhearing. And that was based on actually experiences I had when I was a correspondent in the Middle East. And I would see the lengths that girls would go to when education was denied them. And I remember one girl telling me about how she would sit on the roof of her house because she could overhear the classes that her brother was attending.
She meets this Wampanoag boy before he even has the name Caleb. What would it have been like for members of that tribe living on Martha's Vineyard in the 17th century with this influx of Puritans who were escaping the more rigid Puritanism of the mainland?
At first, the impact was not high because there were only a handful of English families and there were 3,000 Wampanoag living very well on the island. And we know that from the documents that the English wrote, and also because the Wampanoag became literate very, very quickly.
Well, did the Puritans see this as an opportunity to act as missionaries?
A few did. That wasn't really what was on a lot of people's minds. What they were just trying to, you know, make a successful life for themselves. And so for the first year of the colony, as far as I can tell, there was very little interaction. But then, of course, a dispossession by disease happened very rapidly, and English diseases swept the island and created great havoc. And then, of course, another kind of dispossession, which was when you have a property economy coming into a place that has a very different idea about ownership of land, and the two ideologies conflicted. And within 100 years, you had a dispossession of kids being indentured away from their families onto whaling ships or as domestics, and the culture of the Wampanoag suffering from that.
Your Bethia learns to speak the Wampanoag language, but she keeps it a secret.
Yeah, she keeps a lot to herself because women's role is very constrained in the Puritan world, and she has learned that she is not meant to have a voice. So she knows a lot more than she says. And when she does break out, it's often with very serious consequences for her.
I'm talking with Geraldine Brooks, whose latest novel is Caleb's Crossing. It is published by Viking. I was interested to note that a Harvard student graduating this month is also a member of the Vineyard Wampanoag tribe.
Yeah, this is a really exciting event and a cause of great celebration on the Vineyard.
He isn't the second one, is he?
She.
She?
Well, here's the thing. A couple of members of the tribe have received graduate degrees in recent years, but she is the first one to complete the 4-year undergraduate degree at Harvard since Caleb.
Do we know how Caleb was treated in Harvard in the 1660s?
We're not really sure. There are a few letters that refer to him and refer to him with real respect and admiration for his academic ability. Apparently he was tested by none other than John Winthrop on his Latin and Greek, and Winthrop, who is no great friend to the Indians, compliments him. And you know, there are just a few references. But The histories of Harvard were all written in the 19th and 20th centuries, and that's where you encounter the really overt knee-jerk racism, where they say, well, this was obviously just a ploy to get money out of the English, and these kids couldn't really have been any good. I don't buy that.
You've written it, as I said, in Bethia's voice, and that is the voice of somebody who's living in the 17th century. How much did you try to actually duplicate the way English was spoken in Massachusetts at that time?
I love to get the right word. So if I come across something and I haven't seen a word for it in any of the writings of the time, there's this wonderful thing called the Oxford Thesaurus of the English language, and you can go dig down and find out what word they would have used. So when I wanted her to talk about a fetus, I was pretty sure that the 17th century women didn't say fetus. Mm-hmm. And so I looked in my invaluable resource and found that the word is shapeling.
What was the future for someone like Caleb? Obviously, he couldn't just go back to the tribe and live a normal life.
I don't want to give away what happens to him, but I will say that by the time he finished his degree, it's pretty apparent that he was destined to be a man of affairs in the colony. He was with Thomas Danforth, who was a noted jurist and deputy governor. And I think the fact that Danforth had taken an interest in him meant that he was destined for something very important.
What about the character you've created? What do you think would have become of her? Do you imagine she would ever be able to find happiness either by accepting her role as a wife and mother or by breaking through barriers?
I don't imagine her breaking out of her family, but I imagine her pursuing knowledge and taking great satisfaction from what she's able to glean from the education that she's fought so hard to get.
Geraldine Brooks is the New York Times bestselling author of People of the Book, March, which won the 2006 Pulitzer Prize in Fiction, and Year of Wonders, and the nonfiction works Nine Parts of Desire and Foreign Correspondence. Her latest book is a novel called Caleb's Crossing. It is published by Viking, and I thank you so much for being with us again.
Thank you, Leonard.